Male peacocks, those big ass feathers that they have, makes it so they fly like they can barely fly at all.
They're like, these feathers, total death trap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But look how dope I look. Scotch. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 291 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast, Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm hanging around downtown by myself, and I've had too much caffeine.
I'm Sam, drinking candy cane hot chocolate.
This is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is December 27th, 20 Blendy. Before we get started, we have a warning. There's going to be profanity in this show. We'd also like to thank our recurring supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net. Thanks for recurringly supporting the podcast. We appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the last episode of the year.
The last episode of 2020.
And because of some calendar magic, this is both the last episode that we are recording this year, and it's the last episode that we are releasing this year. So it's just the last.
We're finally synced up, you know?
We are synced up. 2020. Well,
it was a good time.
Good riddance.
Yeah, it's fun to look back, you know, after, well, all this wreckage of various forms and formats, and just say what happened.
What happened? So we're gonna do that. This is our 2020 year in review episode. At the start of this year, we came up. We did what we always do. We came up with a name, an idea, something that was going to guide us through the year.
Sort of a spirit animal to keep us pointed in the right direction for 2020.
Yeah, a verbal spirit animal. This year, it was 20 Blendy, because we said, this year, you know what? Let's embrace change. Let's mix it up. You know, let's inject some chaos into our lives a little bit and experience some new things.
Now, before anyone burns us at the stake for the prophecies / monkey paw nature of this prediction and wish, we didn't have anything to do with what has happened on a global scale this
year. As far as we know.
We just monkey pawed it. Yep. I mean, we did do that. I'll give you that. But we should have been more specific. That's on us. When making a wish, you got to be more specific.
Yeah, I didn't realize you got to knock on wood when you make wishes too, I think, you know, to cancel out the monkey paw.
If Wonder Woman 84 taught us anything, it's that just don't fucking make wishes, you know?
Don't make wishes.
Because you got to be ready for the random chaotic consequences.
Mm-hmm. Now, admittedly, this was more of a guideline than a wish, but, you know, apparently they're...
I think a guideline is a recurring wish. Which is even worse.
Yeah.
Hey, all I know is that the power of now, always, you know, they talk about this wishful thinking, this positive thinking stuff where you like bring into being the things you want just by thinking about it all the time.
They never talk about the dark side of that, though.
No,
you know?
They don't.
So this did, you know, this did turn out to be a transitional year in many ways. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing that always happens when we launch a game, because it's the end of a chapter. You know, we're finished with a big project, and then we have to figure out what to do next. But at the same time, some other stuff changed too. So we're just gonna kind of talk through the timeline of the year and the big stuff that that we experienced and some lessons that we took home from those things. So starting off in sort of the very beginning of this year, January, February, we were working on Levelhead. It was still in early access. We were negotiating a bunch of deals, trying to figure out how to make this game have the biggest splash.
We still didn't know when we were going to launch. We still didn't know it was going to launch everywhere at the same time. We still didn't know on mobile, is it going to be a premium title, or are we going to have to come up with some free-to-play scheme? I don't think we've ever talked about our ideas for that, but we had some schemes. We had some ideas about how we might do that.
Oh, mm-hmm. We schemed.
We did scheme.
Yeah. We schemed like never before. Yep. And then we were like, never mind, let's not do this.
Yeah, we really didn't want to do any of it, but we were scheming, you know. And then, but that brought us to like one of those really important deals. And I think the important point here being that, like, at the beginning of this year, we still didn't know what was going to happen with Levelhead. And the thing that solidified what we then chose to do was that we finished negotiating our deal with Google for Google Play Pass. And that was a thing that we can't, of course, like go to the specifics of the deal, but it was a thing that allowed us to say, okay, well, in Play Pass, monetization doesn't matter. And mm-hmm. with the Play Pass deal, we were guaranteed that basically launching on mobile was going to be worth doing.
Yep.
And so that meant we didn't. We just didn't have to go through the process of trying to ask, how do we make this game as viable as possible on mobile from a monetization perspective? We just got to say, let's not worry about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We're doing free to play.
Yep. And around that same time that we were trying to figure all that out, we also expanded the team by hiring Jordan as a full-time QA tester. And he has done great work over this past year to develop a bunch of QA processes to get our games into a much better state. And it's honestly, it's been such a huge peace of mind to just always have a second pair of eyes on everything that's going out the door.
Yeah.
You know, up to the moment. And of course, we've spent the past couple of years growing a QA team of part-time and remote testers and stuff. But having now somebody full-time in-house who's just like, as soon as we deploy a build, he's ready to pick it up and make sure it's working on everything, you know. It's been fantastic.
Well, we got to the point now at the end of the year, because we put out a lot of builds over the past few months, which we'll get mm-hmm. into as we hit the later part of the calendar year. But
yeah.
But the end result of this, having brought Jordan on board, is that now, I mean – We spit out all these builds, and they all have to go through the different platforms, you know, requirements, checks, and their cert processes. And this final, like the final rounds we've done, fucking spotless. Like they almost all of them just sail through cert because we've already caught all the things ahead of time. And the ones that don't are always like these really weird things that we just haven't seen yet. And they're very rare at this
point. Yeah. Or they're kind of like a discretionary thing, you know, where some reviewers like, look, I know that this is technically fine, but I'd really prefer if you did it this way. We're like, shit, you know, can't account for everything, but we can account for a lot of things. And now we are, which is great. So it's kind of like January, February, March rolled around and we were prepping for Levelhead launch. And at the same time, I got two talks into GDC. Which then, of course, was canceled because there was a global pandemic. You guys remember that?
Yeah, yep. I remember that.
Remember that?
Yeah, well, I think it was still up to still going. I think the week before we were supposed to fly out for GDC was when we finally canceled everything. Yes. At that time, it was still so uncertain about what the best moves were, and like the whole country would just, like didn't. Nobody knew. They were like, "Can we get away with it?" Because like, yeah, like the pandemic has started, but like it's just next week, right? Like that's probably fine. And looking back, it is hilarious how optimistic we were about the idea that like that maybe it would be fine if we just
squeeze in under this pandemic,
see 40,000 other people.
Also known as being a part of the start of the spread of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Like once the NBA canceled, we were like, okay, yep, this is. And then it was like dominoes. Yeah, like every event just suddenly canceled. So GDC was canceled. I recorded my talks at home and uploaded them to the YouTube channel, which you can now. So now this is actually a silver lining of that is if GDC hadn't been canceled, then almost nobody would have been able to see my talks except for the people at GDC. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now anybody can see them because they're both on the GDC YouTube channel. So you can just look – I think if you just look up my name, Seth Koster, and GDC, then they'll come up. So that was super fun. Also, so it was fun, but also, boy, is that a lot of work.
Yeah.
I always forget how fucking hard it is to put together a really good talk. And then by the time it's done, I always feel like my talk is medium, you know, because mm-hmm. I'm like, if only I had put in another – 200 hours.
Yeah. And the talks were well received and it went really well and they've been shared really extensively. Yep. Yeah, and it was great. But yeah, they are so much work. But this was also though the first year that GDC sort of put out a nominal payment for speakers, right? Like not enough to cover your time costs, like even close, right? But enough to like it was still significant enough that you didn't feel like they didn't like throw $20 at you. It wasn't like that. Because at that point, it's just insulting, you know, but it was a substantial amount of money, not for the time spent, but just as an amount of money. And so that was nice. Like this has been a problem for the GDC since the beginning, basically this sort of exploitation of labor. And they actually made some improvements.
Well, and admittedly, because we cut out all the travel expenses, you know, it almost was a good deal. So.
Still a hell of a lot better deal than it would have been had we spent all the money. And there were, of course, some things that we lost because we couldn't get reimbursed for or couldn't get our money back for a lot of things. But
yeah. So at that same time, so mid-March, I think it was March 16th, we all came into the office on Monday, and we all kind of looked at each other and we're like, we can't do this anymore. Like this, we have to shut the office down. This fucking plague is sweeping across everything, and we have the ability to work from home because we are a software development company.
And
we have to. So,
and importantly, we had decided the launch date of Crashlands, of Levelhead already. So we knew the Levelhead was going to be coming out at the end of April.
Yep.
At this time,
we were like, we need to leave as soon as possible so that we can figure out how to do all this shit from home.
So we have six weeks before launch. Let's go ahead and just move the whole fucking office. Let's do it.
Yeah. You know. So it was honestly kind of emotionally tough because that office was. It was a big deal. I don't know how you guys felt about it, but like we had worked, the three of us had worked independently during Crashlands launch, sort of in our own apartments. Adam was in Texas throughout that. And then we all moved, we got everybody into St. Louis, but then we were just working out of my basement, you know? Mm-hmm. And when we got that office, it was kind of like that first big symbol, you know, of like, wow. Look, we're doing it. We're really doing it now. You know, like we have a place that we all come to do our work. And we have like our part-time QA, like they come into the office and we have a back room full of like dev kits that they're testing stuff on. It was like feeling like
a legit game studio.
Feeling like a real game studio. And then just like, boom.
And we had that for a whole year, right? Or – More than a year and a half.
Yeah, mid-2018 was when we set up that office. Yeah. So we had it for almost 2 years, and it was very much feeling like a home, you know. But then we had to ditch it. So we switched to work from home, and we've been sort of constantly adjusting that. But we kind of feel like we're getting into a pretty good pace. The one big thing we missed though about remote work, the real bullshit thing about remote work, is that you don't have a whiteboard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, as we all know, whiteboard is the best way to get anything done, period, full stop. That's why every time you watch any movie, when there's a smart person, what are they doing? They're writing on a fucking whiteboard.
Yep.
They don't have a whiteboard?
Yeah,
they got a window. Yeah. They got glass. They're writing on something vertical with a marker because that's how you really like bring out the best of your own mind. But you can't do that, you know. When you work from home,
a mouse is a shitty pen at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know?
So our big plan for 2021, right out of the gate, we got to figure out how to bring back whiteboarding online. So we're going to try to figure out, do we need tablets? Do we need something? I don't know. Something.
Do we need a bunch of smart boards that we all have in our home offices that we can stand up on and have a camera look at our face and project it onto the wall and then.
Yeah,
I mean, probably
like
not,
an elaborate system of mirrors.
Exactly what I was thinking.
whatever the case may be, you know, I do think that remote work has its ups, it has its downs, but it definitely needs whiteboards. So we're going to work on that. And then we shut down the studio, the office. The studio is still running. Mm-hmm. We come into April.
Although we should say also during that month, we were in negotiations with Epic about two things. Well, one was the main one, though, the thing that started it was getting Crashlands in as a freebie, which was at the time we didn't get to talk about it at all because, you know, it was all under NDA. So we didn't get to say that we were working on this or that even when it was a done deal, we didn't get to talk about it because for Epic, they're like, all these are always a surprise. Like what's going to be the free game of the week? Right. And so we just didn't get to talk about it, but it was like, we were in these intense negotiations during that time. And that was great. Like it was a good business deal, but it was also a good new business relationship that we got to create with Epic. And then along with that, just as a side effect, we also got to launch Levelhead on the platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we did them at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's all happening also while we're moving the office.
Yeah. And all that shit. Yeah. So we ended up launching Levelhead. It was April 30th, right? Like mm-hmm. right at the end of April.
Yep.
So it kind of like the launch of Levelhead kind of bled into May a bit, but so we launched on Steam, Switch, Xbox, UWP, which is the Windows Microsoft version store. Of the Microsoft Store, the Epic Store, the App Store on iOS, and Google Play, and also Google Play Pass and Xbox Game Pass, mm-hmm. also in 12 languages.
And we added traditional Chinese 2 weeks before launch.
Yes,
that's just like right at the last minute. Uh-huh. And so it was huge in terms of just the breadth of availability mm-hmm. we had for this game.
And we had solid featuring on basically all platforms except for Steam and kind of a little bit middling on iOS, but everywhere else like just top notch.
Yep.
Top notch featuring.
Yeah. So we felt like, you know, the launch went pretty well. We got a pretty healthy number of players, especially coming in through like the, you know, Google Play Pass and Xbox Game Pass because they're, you know, subscription services with a large number of people in them already who can just grab the game. And so then coming into June, we put together the Void update where we jammed out a bunch of fun cool stuff kind of built around the new power up.
Yeah. And we should also say that was so with the launch, like the launch went fine. The most important thing was we had solid business deals going in. And so it almost didn't matter how it went, but it went like as a technical process, smooth as silk, everything worked out fucking great.
Yeah. This was the first time we've launched something and we didn't have to panic.
Yeah. It was really just no big deal.
I would say our early access launch back when we first launched Levelhead onto Steam was similarly smooth, but it was
one
just on Steam, and we can patch Steam instantly.
Yeah.
Right. So it was a different animal than launching on, you know, seven platforms, several of which have in some cases, you know, weeks long approval processes, especially during the start of the pandemic.
Yeah, because leading up to when everybody started working from home, our slowest turnaround time for cert, I think, was like 4 or 5 business days. Like it was very fast, actually. And then after, as people started to work from home and none of these big companies were quite ready for that, and some of them have really intense, you know, security policies and stuff. And so the end result of that is that those got kicked out. And one of them in particular was kicked out to up to 3 weeks. And so
– Yep.
And that was before.
So imagine that. Yeah. Imagine that. You launch your game. Something is truly wrong with it that you feel is compromising the launch. Mm-hmm. And you have to wait 3 weeks before anybody at that platform will even look at your game and tell you whether they're going to allow
the patch. We barely got the final update.
Yeah, Levelhead got its final cert, I think, 5 days before the launch.
Yeah.
It was so
barely squeaked by.
Yeah, despite that we turned that sucker in the first week of April. Like within the first few days of April. Because we were like, we know it's going to be longer, but surely it's not going to be more than, you know, twice
and then
as
just,
long.
And then just the kept days, going. Yeah, the days just kept ticking by and we're just like starting to get that, you know, anime sweat beads.
Yep.
Just like, oh.
And the end result of all of those, of the deals and all this other stuff was that Levelhead has had hundreds of thousands of players at this point.
Yeah.
Which is fucking rad.
Yeah. But also it's still this kind of really great community and it's still
to this day. Yep. Thousands of people playing it every day, which is fucking awesome.
Yeah. But it was also the case that we didn't know what we're going to do post launch because that all depends on what happens. Right. Mm-hmm. And so because while the game it's got players, like people love it, it's doing well. The numbers we were seeing didn't warrant basically like spending, you know, the next 2 years also working on Levelhead or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And so, and that was what we were waiting for. We're going to find out like, so, you know, the game did well enough financially. But it wasn't going to continue to pay for itself if we continued to just dump huge amounts of dev resources into it. And so that was sort of the next thing. We're like, okay, let's wrap up this thing, tie neat bow on it with one, you know, big spectacular patch. And then,
so that was the Void.
That was the Void.
Yeah. So we got tons of fun new stuff into that update that we had always been wanting to do, but felt like, you know, because of the launch coming and all these other things that we never quite had time. And it was just kind of like a lot of it was kind of stuff that sounds simple, like, oh yeah, we'll just add some extra color options, like to customize some things. Yeah. Which end up like opening up tons of amazing new cosmetic level design.
Oh, yeah, and the ideas. Results, like the stuff the players have made as a consequence, has been spectacular.
It's amazing. So we're very pumped, still pumped about sort of what we managed to achieve with that patch. So then coming into July and like July, August, September, kind of like the summer months, that was the point where we kind of had to take stock of like, okay, what's next. We knew that Game Maker had a big update coming, and we also had kept getting these opportunities coming up from Crashlands, you know, despite it being like 4 years old. Like new business deals were presenting themselves from time to time for Crashlands to continue to help support the studio and all that. And we kind of realized like Crashlands is showing its age. It's still using B-Scotch ID. It's not using any of our modern development practices, and it's just hard to work with. And the same thing was true of all of our classic games, you know, our legacy games that we made like way back when the studio first started. You know,
basically all by 2014, like right, like yeah. All the rest yeah. of them were yeah. six years.
Yeah, ago. Yeah, the games that we made in the first couple of years of the existence of the studio were causing us a lot of grief because they were hard to patch and hard to program in, and they would sometimes crop up with bugs or maybe like, oh, there's a new iOS version, right? And now all of a sudden our games don't work and we have to patch them all, which shouldn't be a big deal, but it always was, you know? Mm-hmm. So we kind of decided to take the summer to rebuild the foundations of all of the old games. Bring them into Rumpus, get B-Scotch ID ripped out of them, and then also to prepare them to transition to Game Maker 2.3. So it was just like this big tech debt clearing.
Yep, this is the tech debt burn down rodeo circus mm-hmm. that we talked about for months in the podcast.
Rebuilt all of our tools. Like, yeah,
it was a big thing, and it required a big transition plan, the most complicated of which was all of the data in B-Scotch ID, all the player saves, the cloud saves, all that stuff, preserving that and bringing it into Rumpus, and also making it so that it, like, if somebody updated, say, Quadrupus Rampage, and where it used to be B-Scotch ID, now it's Rumpus, that player could understand what that means and very easily just sign right back in and just have their stuff, yep. right? It took a lot of thinking, but it worked. By the time we got it all done, we got it working, and it was pretty dang smooth. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I would say we didn't have any like major problems with it. So
yeah. And so, while this tech debt burned out stuff's going on, then my job was to flip over and say, okay, well, if continued work on Levelhead isn't the pace that we want to be setting for the next, you know, little while here, then what the hell are we going to do to put mm-hmm. out another game, to do something big for the studio? And so that's where the discussions we've been talking about Crashlands 2 for, you know, since the original came out. And so this finally seemed like the moment to do it, but because of the success of Levelhead and then the continued success of Crashlands, I think that's been honestly one of the big surprising things from this year is just the extent to which Crashlands has continued to
just
continue to thrive. You know, we got into Google Play Pass mm-hmm. Recently. It's been doing great there. And so it's just been, it's one of those very, it's frankly very surprising things. Just how long in the tooth this game has managed to get. And so we talked about that a lot. We did a bunch of research on sequels. What's important for a sequel? How do people do better with a sequel than they did with the original?
And the answer was, it's pure chaos. Really there's knows. No answer.
Yeah. Pure chaos.
And so which is always the answer every time we have a question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it didn't. At least didn't look like it was going to be a dumb idea.
It wasn't obviously a bad idea. Was
certainly. Frankly, that's usually about the most that's assurance the best you could get. Do, yeah. Yeah. So with that, then while the tech debt was going on, tech debt burned down, then I was just doing a bunch of research and specking out what the hell we maybe could do for trying to take Crashlands up a notch for a sequel. And so that was kind of those whole 3 months was just a lot of that in the background too.
Yeah, so Sam was working on all that. And then October rolled around. We finished our Rumpus transition. We had our big game design document for Crash Lands 2. We were transitioned into GameMaker 2.3. B-Scotch ID was largely defunct, I think, except on Crash Lands on the Switch.
Yeah.
I think that was the last bastion of where B-Scotch ID was living.
Yeah, we're having a little trouble getting through cert on that update.
Yeah, re-getting through. Right. Which actually was largely because of some issues with GameMaker 2.3 that we were still kind of reconciling. So we were kind of at the tail end of that big transition, and it was time to start working on Crash Lands 2.
Yeah, and the hope was originally that by like in December, we could basically send out a big update to all players and say, hey, we're transitioning off of B-Scotch ID. Here are the consequences. Here's what you need to do if there's any risk of data loss and that sort of stuff. And then be able to turn it off like a month or two later. But we still got this one game we're holding on to, or this one platform. Yeah. So that, as
with all plans, that one got postponed a bit. Yeah.
But went way better than it had any right to, that whole process.
I'm proud of it. I think it went well. So then for the past couple of months, we've just been working on Crash Lands 2. And it has been an interesting challenge because I think we're approaching this game in a new way, which is we are not focused on output. We're not focused on production per se. Right now we're focused on experimentation and research. So this is basically saying, let's really take the time to dig into shaders. Let's do some experiments with multiplayer. You know, let's try some new art tools. Let's try some new rendering techniques. And just see how far we can push all these things. And then once we were feeling good about our ability to execute these different mechanics or these different visions that we have of how the game should look and feel and play,
then we start solidifying. Because we do have a design. Like we know what we think the game – what we currently think the game should look like. But all of it still does hinge on like – for all these different ideas that we have, like what does it look like once we've executed a draft of it, right? Mm-hmm. And so the thing isn't solid yet, but it is solidifying, and it has been like this change in approach has already been pretty spectacular. Just to kind of watch how stuff is. We found ourselves with a little bit of pre-optimization kind of blind alleys we got to kind of walk back out of, but outside of that, the progress has been. Actually quite good. Like Sam's got a whole new art pipeline now, and the art coming out of it is fucking dope. So I can't wait until like and Seth and I are like, we're just figuring out multiplayer and it's currently in a just shit state and it doesn't work in any meaningful way, but it works enough that like two players can walk around and hit make trees have less health and like see that on the other person's screen, right? which is still pretty cool, but I will say that it still has
a long way to go.
It's got a long way to go, but it is a bummer to me that when I'm looking at this, like I'm watching Seth's character run around and I'm running around in this world that looks so fucking awesome that it's just not time yet to share that with anybody.
Honestly, it's not going to be time for a long time.
No, it's not going to be time for a while. That's my only current bummer right now with Crash Lands 2 is that I'm actually now so excited about the path that it's clearly taking in terms of just how the quality of the appearance and the quality of the game mechanics. Because we changed a lot of stuff already from what Crash Lands was, but we're still holding true to what we think Crash Lands was all about. And those changes are just so good. They're just so spectacular. But like, we don't get to talk. We don't get to share it.
Yeah,
you know, I would say we don't get to show it to you yet.
We don't want to. We're not trying to take things to a new level. We're just trying to take them to the next level, right? All the cool core ideas from original Crash Lands, just move them further down the path of coolness. You know.
My explicit goal, and we mentioned on the podcast with all this stuff. Is that the first time anyone sees this game that they're just like, I need it. I just fucking need it. I need it injected into my body. Like, gimme. And so that's just going to take – it just takes a bit. We're pursuing a bit of a different method as far as, you know, the official announcement goes, since we haven't technically announced Crash Lands 2 yet. And for like, you know, to the press and all that. And mainly what it comes down
We haven't unveiled it.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we just won't be doing that until we arrive at that point where we are honestly 100% certain that outcome, where someone sees it and it emotionally resonates and they need it, is going to be the majority outcome for people.
This is the thing we struggled the most with, right? Is we've made games that once people play, they love. Right,
that are mechanically extremely good.
Are mechanically great. They feel really good. They build communities around them, people who are really into it. I mean, there are people still playing Quadrupus Rampage who are fucking mm-hmm. into it. And actually, the last time we went to physical GDC in real life, two GDCs ago, we actually got stopped a few times by when people saw our Butterscotch Shenanigans shirts, and they're like, "Oh, you guys made Quadrupus Rampage, right?" out of left field, because yeah,
we're like, I mean, yes, but
you know, that's not what we're known for. Yeah. So we've done that, but the thing we haven't managed to really do is make it so that once we had the game and got it out, that we didn't feel like it was a fucking struggle to get people to care, to see it and give it a shot. Right. Mm-hmm. That's the thing we've been struggling with. And we still had that with Levelhead even, right? Like, cause Levelhead is fucking great once you play it, there's something
getting people through that door.
Getting people through that door, which mm-hmm. we've just been struggling yeah. with. And so our really big goal, I think, as a studio, is that for Crashlands 2, that we figured out how to make it so that it isn't a struggle. So that part isn't a struggle. That when people see it, they want to talk about it. They want to share it with other people, so that we're not over here trying to convince them. Like, oh, no, like it's this genre. Like, you're into this. Like, it's perfect for you. Like, you, this YouTuber or press person, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, please go share. Like, we're trying to avoid having that part of the stress.
Yeah. And it's been interesting as we've been thinking through how to create Crashlands 2, how to think about the marketing or the unveiling, you know. This is also in the context of this cyberpunk saga that's been going on, yeah. Where what we saw there was a game that by all accounts is fine when it works, right? For a lot of people, it doesn't work, barely runs on their device. But still, the idea of the game emotionally resonated with people so profoundly. But there was a point during this summer when Steam was doing their wish list event where people took to Steam and deleted every game from their wish list except for Cyberpunk in hopes of getting a free copy, even yeah. though they had no idea what the gameplay was.
To clarify, that event was basically like a raffle where Steam was going to give you a free game on your wish list, right? A random subset of users would get a random game off of their wish list, right?
It's going to be the top one, whichever one is first in their wish list.
Yeah, but they didn't convey that clearly enough. Yeah. And so people were just like, oh no, I want to make sure that I get this game.
Yeah,
and so I honestly, and they're like, I honestly don't care if I forget about every single other game that I've been wanting. Like, I want this one, right? And so something about what they did and the ways that they conveyed the game, the world that they built, the ideas present in the game, made it so that that game just carved out a permanent space in people's minds where they were like, I don't care what else happens in my life, I need this game, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And so we're kind of looked at that and we're like, how do we hit, I don't know, even 3% of that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, 1% of that would be
Of that level of stickiness.
If we had 1% of that, we would have, 800,000 pre-orders of Crashlands?
Yeah, I think
Is it? I think it's 80,000. 800. I think it's 80.
They sold 8 million, right?
Yeah, they sold 8 million.
8 million pre-orders.
Pre-orders.
So
I think 10% of 80,000.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But 80,000 pre-orders would also be a lot of pre-orders, yeah. you know? So
yeah, I'm just – here's the thing. I'm tired of it because uh-huh. our studio executes on the launch / the DevOps side of things extremely effectively. I feel like we execute on the game mechanics side of things. Like all these pieces and I legitimately, so again, even though Levelhead's done really well, it largely has done well because of the subscription platforms. Not necessarily because of just selling, and then we get this comment on Steam every so often, right? Where it's like, if you're looking at Steam numbers, you won't see the fact that there's thousands of people playing because they're not playing on Steam. And so this has just bugged the shit out of me. It bugged me a little bit during Crashlands days even, because we would get those comments from people who were like, oh, it's a mobile game. because it was cute and it had like a top-down aesthetic. And then not much really going on, you know, frankly, beyond that. And I'm just – I am so over it that I'm going to grab people by the eyeballs and I'm just saying,
make look at this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's honestly like that's our big focus for 2021 is we got to dig down, lay some new foundations.
Think differently.
Think differently so that when we unveil Crashlands 2, that even people who didn't know about Crashlands 1 see this game and are just pumped beyond belief. Mm-hmm. Like, we want to be the game that people are deleting every other game from their wish lists to make sure that they get in a raffle. I mean, not that I want people to, you know, be deleted from the wish lists, but like, if people are going to be deleted, how about it not be us?
Yep. Well, yeah, you know, that would be nice. We always talk about how in the game space, like the reality is that indie games largely aren't actually competing with each other in a meaningful way, but also indie games aren't competing with AAA in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
But there are exceptions to this, right? There are exceptions where there are particular games that when that game is available, like people will get that and nothing else. And like that is actually true. And, you know, it would be nice to be that, like not nice for everybody else. And like, and I hate the idea that that's the outcome for everybody else, right? But man, it'd be nice to have that game, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and of course, we know that like that level is an absolute long shot because that level of fervor is almost exclusively reserved for upcoming AAA titles. Mm-hmm. But we want to try to,
but not exclusively, because then you've got Stardew Valleys and you've got got the other games.
So we want to try to work our way toward that. And honestly, this is something I've been thinking about too. I think we have a big problem because we're from Iowa. Like,
yep.
Our culture in the Midwest is all about like just work hard and don't be too flashy about things.
Do it right. Do it right, but don't tell anybody. Don't let them know.
Yeah, because that's nobody likes a braggart. Nope. You know.
Which does bring us to our theme for 2021.
That's true.
Ooh, do we want to unveil it?
I mean, this is a good transition because
I love it.
We captured the whole year.
All right. So the theme for 2021 is 2021, dunk on everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. What does it mean to dunk? Dunking is an unnecessary thing, right? Like, you could get that ball in that hoop a large number of ways. And frankly, getting that close to the basket, having to travel that far, it's dangerous up there.
You could sprain your wrists on there too, because you're going to slap your wrists against the rim.
You could shatter the backboard, you know?
Yeah, and if we want to really get into some basketball metaphors here, you know, people are nowadays kind of bemoaning the loss of the dunk because people are shooting so many three-pointers nowadays because they're just more efficient. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But nobody remembers the flashy three-pointers because three-pointers aren't flashy. People remember the dunks, okay? So,
because the dunk is specifically a person leaping over all of the other people.
It's bombastic.
It is.
It is a show off, flashy move that didn't need to happen, but oh boy, is it fucking cool. Right? So
and it does 2020, still get the job done, importantly, right?
It does get the job done, yes.
You still get the ball.
The ball goes in. If you get there, it's going in.
The other part, too, is that actually it's less effective than a three pointer because. Harder to pull off, fewer points, right? But it's so much more spectacular that you want that.
You want to sell more tickets.
Yeah. Dunks sell tickets, right? Mm-hmm.
Three-pointers people don't come sell to see Jordan dunking on people, not whoever nowadays shoots all the three-pointers, you know?
Which is this is an important lesson, right? Because like as we're talking about, it doesn't matter if your game is fucking stellar, right? Like what matters is how much do people want it?
Matters is how much is your game dunking on people, you know, on the rest of the games. So 2021, the idea here is this is the year of figuring out not just how to be good at something, but how to show off, how to get to a place where other people see how good you are at what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And they're like, damn, that's fucking dope.
Yep.
That's what 2021 is. Because
you know, also like we've all been trapped indoors for the most part for all of 2020, and hopefully that'll change. You know, within the next couple of months of 2021,
Or at least by halfway through it, which
halfway through the year
timeline looks like.
So, you know, there's going to be kind of a, you know, reemergence thing, sort of a theme going on anyways. So
rather come out of your cocoon, doing a dunk.
So that's what we're going to be focusing on for next year. Now I'm going to knock on some wood because who God knows what hell we have wrought.
Yeah, what's the monkey paw consequence of this?
I think probably the monkey paw scenario is somehow by revealing Crashlands 2, we sort of tear a black hole in the universe and dismantle the entire global economy.
Yeah, or we somehow break our wrists on the rims, you know.
Yep.
Does that happen? I guess it could.
I don't see why.
Definitely.
I don't think that happens. I think that you're more likely to break the backboard.
I think get glass in your eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's cool though.
So, I mean, it's awesome. Sells a lot of tickets.
That would sell a lot of tickets, wouldn't it? Man, did you see how hard that guy dunked?
Did you see how all the blood?
I mean, think about it.
Exploded the backboard.
They have dunking contests that people watch because it's fucking awesome to watch. You don't have a 3-point contest because it's just like a grace. I mean, it's a good display of skill, but it's not nearly as fucking cool.
Yeah, it's impressive, but not exciting.
Yeah.
You know?
They bring fans up onto the court and they put a big foam pad down and a trampoline so that they can try to dunk. Mm-hmm. They don't just hand them a ball and say, try to shoot a 3-pointer. Nobody cares about that. It's all about dunks. 2021, dunk on everyone. Right now, we're all sort of soft, squishy caterpillars in our cocoon, and our cocoon of working from home. By the time 2021 comes out, we're going to be flying as butterflies.
Yep.
And you know why butterflies fly? So they can dunk.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You know? That's right.
It is pointless for a butterfly to be neon blue. In fact, it's a bad idea.
Definitely.
Everything can just see it. But you know what butterflies are doing? They're dunking. They're dunking on everyone because they don't give a fuck that they are neon orange and blue because they're still around.
Yep.
They're still surviving. They're still doing it because they don't give a shit.
Peacocks, male peacocks, those big ass feathers that they have makes it so they fly like shit. They can barely fly at all.
They're like, these feathers, total death trap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But look how dope I look.
And look, I'm still alive.
I'm still alive somehow.
Despite how hard I'm trying to not be, you know?
Like, yeah, can you believe this?
It's just a different tactic. Because, like, yeah, you can get real fast and be able to, like, run away or fly away. But it's even more awesome if a big creature comes up to eat you and you just fan out a fabulous tail and then it's like, I don't know what's happening. And it just fucking leaves, you know? Yep. There's different methods, you know?
That's the nature equivalent of a dunk.
Yeah, we're going to move into the dunking territory because, frankly, we've been shooting threes.
We've been trying to be very efficient.
You know? I'm here, and
we've been trying to play the game based on the formula, you know? Get the most points in the most efficient way possible. It's about DevOps. It's about tight gameplay mechanics, you know? It's about good balance and all that. But now it's about the flash.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we'll still go for having good gameplay and shit.
Well, just because we have it.
You know. We've got that part covered now, so we're not worried about that part. All right, well, let's get on to some questions, you guys.
Let's do it.
You want to do some questions?
Yeah.
All right. All right, these questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. These are the last questions of 20 Blendy. The first question comes from Chalosis, who says, what is a design choice one of you pushed hard for that ended up being totally wrong once it was implemented? I love stories like that.
Levelhead, there's actually a bunch of interesting ones. I've gone back and listened to some of our old podcast episodes from basically around the early access launch. So if you want to hear those, like just go back about a year and a half and listen, because every fucking episode is like, ooh, we realized we fucked this one up. Right. But the fun thing was, is that each one of those design decisions were arguments, right? Cause like, and again, the, for us, argument is reaching a consensus by, you know, but it is always the case that one person like really believes a thing and then everybody else gets bought in. Right. And there's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of like, because originally we made it so that, you had to unlock all the content, in Levelhead
via the campaign.
Via the campaign. Yeah.
And I was very pro that, you know. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, and I think I was – I'm pretty sure I was
I think also, all three of us were. We were like – I think
we might have all been.
That way you can – you know, because people don't know what our stuff is. We had a lot of good reasons.
Yeah.
You know.
And then, but also we had the checkpoints. It used to be finite, right? Mm-hmm. And that one particularly, like Sam was really into, and like, yep. And I particularly hated, right? And so we had this like back and forth. Then eventually we decided, because the players just also hated it too. And so eventually, yep. we got rid of
I
that.
I was
one,
very right? wrong. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, I would say though, I would take a step back on this question though. And I would say, I don't think any of us necessarily push hard for a particular design choice. Like we all have reasons. And so things like the checkpoint is kind of a, Sam liked it, Adam didn't like it, and I was kind of neutral about it. Mm-hmm. And we all had good reasons for our positions.
Yeah.
Because none of us knew.
Like, I didn't think Sam was wrong like necessarily.
Yep.
I didn't think that I was right necessarily, right? It was just that there was a bunch of things that were just incompatible. Like some ideas that Sam had about what things meant and how they worked weren't compatible with how I thought things worked. And they mostly revolved around like, what do we mean by difficulty? Right. That was actually what the real problem was.
Yeah.
And what does it mean for something to be difficult and to add and like where the difficulty comes from? And eventually, once we saw how players reacted to it, we collaboratively came up with a new way to think about difficulty based mm-hmm. on that intersection of how we both thought about the problem and then how we saw it play out in real time. And that conclusion wasn't the one that I had reached by myself, right? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't that I was right and that Sam was wrong. It was
these are the trickiest ones, honestly. Yeah. It's when everybody recognizes that someone has a piece of it, but you're like, but which piece is the important one given the context of this particular game and like what players expect and all that stuff. And that's where it gets real, real dicey. Because at some point you just got to be like, maybe this is just a better choice because it's supposed to be this kind of game. So let's try that. And that's honestly where having playtesters come in is like the fucking best, because I've actually realized too that so I've been playing a lot of games on Game Pass, right? And also just, I think this year I've played more games this past year than I think I've probably played cumulatively in honestly like 5 fucking years. Like I've picked them up. I've tried them, given it like half an hour to an hour. If it hooks me, I'm just there for it. And if it doesn't, then I'm just not. And so believe it or not, the most frequent time when I'm like, yeah, fuck this, is the first time I die.
Yep.
Because so often the first time you die, you're like, okay, now like this is the point where I'm reevaluating, like, okay, what do I have to look forward to? Like, is this worth
what's
it? How hard is it to get back?
Consequence of death. Yep.
Yeah. How hard is it to get back to where I was? And yeah, honestly, like 90% of the quits happen right after death. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really important note, which is like in the original idea for Levelhead was with these limited point checkpoints. If you died, sometimes you would get reset all the way back to the beginning of the level. And like, that sucks. And I thought it was great because I was like, I mean, it's hard, you know, and then you get to, it ups the tension. I'm like, this game is already tense as fuck. I mean, that's the reality there. It was like, oh, we already have... the floor of this is already actually high enough to get that feeling. Mm-hmm. We don't need to push it any further. But that was, it was something we...
Yeah, and we kind of developed even rules over the course of that of like, you know, of what it's okay to make someone replay.
Yeah.
You know, because it turned out that like, not only does it suck to replay a whole level, sometimes it sucks to replay even 3% of a level if it's the wrong 3%.
So say say if you hit a power-up, after you get a checkpoint, like right after. But to do so, you got to jump once or twice. Oh, God. Yeah. It's just the most annoying thing. Just move the fucking power up. Put it right before the checkpoint so I can get it, hit the checkpoint, and then move on with my life.
I mean, this is actually when I quit Control, I picked up Control, I don't know, a year ago probably on Epic. Because it was like one of those rare times where I was just like, I want to play like one of the big titles.
Win everything.
And it won everything. It had just won a whole bunch of shit. And I was like, let me give this thing a shot. And fucking stellar. Like I love the whole up and down. I love the whole thing. But I got to this moment where there was a boss fight, and to get to it, I had to just like run for a minute, like across, and I had to fight some like little minor enemies, you know, so I had to like run across this thing, fight a few minor enemies, like go up an elevator and then like walk into this, you know, spectacular boss fight scenario. And then each time I got in there, like I died within, you know, 10 to 20 seconds. So I did it like 3 times. And then that fourth time, I was getting ready to run across this fucking, you know, bridge again. And I was like, I don't want to do this. And so I haven't played since. I just turned it off and I haven't played it again. Right. So yeah, like that placement is so fucking important.
It's brutal. That's absolutely brutal. Yeah. As a designer too, right? Because you're like, I have so much game for you. And then you could just.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing too. Is like, there's so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've probably played like a quarter of that game actually. And which was still a solid, like, I don't know, 6 or 10 hours or something. Like I played a solid amount of that game and again, just loved it. But it got to that point where it suddenly became not worth it, for what is actually frankly a minor thing. Right. But those minor things can have enormous consequence.
Yeah. So there's that one. I guess those two is Levelhead. We've had it.
There's one that I can think of for Crashlands, which I still don't think it was. I don't think it was wrong, but I also now don't know if it mattered as much as we thought it did at the time.
Is it the cowering animals one or is this something else?
No, that one I think we did the right call of removing. It was the requirement that you have to put floors down to build a base to put items down in Crashlands. So this was one where Sam actually did push hard for this one.
Yeah.
And Adam and I were like, I don't know about this. And it was like a 2-hour debate of how, like, if you make people put floors down first, then there's an extra cost of placing things and people will be more likely to then sort of like, once they've started laying floors, then they've got the start of a base and they'll actually sort of.
Because we made build mode really easy. So we're like, if we make you sort of participate.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah. And before we did that, a lot of the behavior was people would not build any floors and they would just lay down like just a workstation in the middle, floating in the middle of nowhere, mm-hmm. right?
It didn't make people feel like they actually had a base, I guess is the short of it. And a lot of times, I think the behavior at that point trended much more toward just carrying the Nomad version, which some people do play Crashlands as, but you just carry your stations with you and put them down whenever you need them as opposed to having a base, right?
Yeah. And so it actually turned out that probably the timer system on the workstations was the bigger driving factor for making people create a base because you can't just like place a station, start a 5-minute craft and then wander off and go back and find the station again, right? Like you want to put your stuff in a place that you can easily return to, right? So you can like start building a bunch of stuff, go harvest, and then when you port back to your base or whatever.
Well, then also once you have three stations and four pets and like, over time you accumulate enough stuff that having to like slap it all down again every time you want to access it starts to become.
Yeah. So it does become annoying to like rebuild your whole base just so you can like craft a thing. So people would end up building a base because it's convenient, right? And then maybe once they've done that, some people would go on to decorate it and lay down a bunch of like build a bunch of golden floors and like trophies and furniture and stuff. And some people just didn't care for that side of things, and they participated in like the most minimal way possible. I don't know. I feel like
I maintain that it's required 100%. I still maintain
to put floors down.
Yeah, because of the timers. So it's sort of it's the same, but because I imagine the scenario where you don't have to put down floors ahead of time when you for example put down your first station. And then you build something that takes, 30 seconds. At that point, you now have a secondary, what's called an orthogonal loop in games, which is something that you can start building on and progressing on that is not related to any of the main sort of line of stuff, which is essentially building a base. Becomes like, I guess I could do this because there's essentially a miniature base built, which consists of floors and some objects, right?
Yeah, you started building a base.
Yeah, and so I think it gives it to me. It's that sort of it's the benefit of like mirrored elevator doors and stuff like that, where it's like it provides just enough of another thing to think about that you're not going to be thinking only about the timer and how annoyed you are that there's a timer counting down that you have to wait for. You know what I mean? Because you got something to go do.
Well, yeah, I think you're right that it helps. I still don't know if it's required. You know.
I think a few things are required, but I think the design. I think the design outcome is actually.
It was a good. I think it was a decent.
I think it's a net positive. I think in the absence of it, I think there are certain parts of the game experience that would have been more annoying, more whatever, because it changes the framing, and that was the important consequence of it, right? Yeah. But yeah, yeah. But the point
still
here is
contentious.
See, so we still don't necessarily know because it's hard to measure it. You can't. We always joke about like you can't get branch the universe. You know, we make a decision at some point in time, and whatever happens as a consequence of that decision happens. And also, we don't actually know what happened as a consequence of that decision. We just know what happened sort of in total as a consequence of all of our decisions.
I do want to revisit the brief one that Adam mentioned, which was originally in Crashlands. The animals wouldn't just sort of like explode in a sort of pinata style when you killed them, but they would actually go down first. And then if you wanted to catch them, you had to get them down first, and then you had to do this little sort of catching mini game. So
they go into this sort of like cowering state.
Right, but it was a
zero health.
It was a cowering, like, I'm not doing anything to you and I'm terrified. Look. State. Okay.
Yeah, it's the Wampan is like literally shivering and crouched with its like ears down, you know, like the whole
yep. And then when you hit it, then because we now know that it's like it's one hit away from death, it actually disengages.
Yeah, so you could either tame it or you can now finish it off.
Right.
Now, in our defense, we just made a live action representation of what happens in Pokemon.
Yeah.
Okay. Because in Pokemon, they're like, here's what you want to do. You want to fight this wild animal. You want to beat the shit out of it. You want to poison it, paralyze it, basically just absolutely decimate its morale to the point where it has given up the will to live. Then you imprison it for life. Yeah,
but imprisoning it though is still different than like the brutal like decapitation.
Well, so that's basically what happens. Like because we knew that we now had a kill shot moment, and so we were like, ooh, perfect place for some juice. And so
Because if the outcome was only that, like once you get to that level, now you can tame it, right? That's a very different vibe because now it's right. It's like Pokemon. It's a very different vibe than like
then or executing it.
But you can execute.
Well, but again, I mean, what happens in Pokemon if you don't catch a wild animal? You do kill it, right?
It faints. I think to Adam's point, it is not shivering and scared.
Yeah.
At the end.
But do we know that about the wild Pokemon?
They do faint.
You know, the point is it doesn't actually matter because it's what consequences of your actions you feel.
Well, I guess more importantly, to fully render the picture here, Flux would do like jump in the air, do like a sick flip, and then just like bash this creature who's cowering on the ground, and then we left a blood splatter behind.
It would explode into loot. There'd be like a blood splatter on the ground.
It was
way too much.
Yeah, so I experienced it because this was like right when I joined the team, and I played and I had that experience, and I was like, guys, this is horrible. This is a terrible thing that you have done.
And we're like, it's just Pokemon. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
it's just like Pokemon.
We had a long argument about that. And I can't even remember what finally like got us to get rid of it.
The problem was actually we felt like we were constrained by the mechanics of the capture game because we were like, here's the thing: you can tame creatures. We need a way for you to enter taming mode that exists outside of combat. And the most obvious way to do that is to have some state where the creature can be captured and is no longer trying to kill you, which naturally was an extension of, just like get its health to zero and now it's tameable. Mm-hmm. You can either choose to tame it or choose to defeat it, right? So once we flipped over that conversation actually led to the eggs.
Yep.
Where we were like, what if you, instead of capturing one, you just raised one from a baby, you know?
Kind of avoid all these horrific problems, you know?
Yeah. Because it also is the case
that it changes the tone, like, because now you're raising a baby animal, you know, and it's like
as opposed to whatever,
versus opposed like subduing, brutally subduing a creature.
Very different vibe. I mean, it was a good change.
The emotional tones. Which I'll say,
we've had many of these.
Yeah,
but there have been many. In fact, every single design decision that has ever been made was a point of contention between some subset of the team, and many of them are still today. In particular, in retrospect, right? Because now you look back at all this shit, and it's like, I don't know about what we did here, you know. Yeah.
And at the very minimum, everything that goes into the game is on some level a point of contention between visuals and optimization.
Oh, yeah. That's really true.
Of Sam being like, check out this fucking dope thing I made. And then I come in and I'm like, but actually, texture space and CPU problems and draw calls. So
and then I'm like, but actually, look at these seven other games that have way more texture space and they run fine. And then Seth's like, but actually. And then we're just, now we're both butts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. We're just butting heads.
That's why they call it butting heads.
And then, and eventually we land somewhere in the middle, you know, where we're optimizing for, you know, something that both of us can get behind. Mm-hmm. So it's, I would say it's very rare that somebody just says, here's something I want to do. And everybody else says, perfect. That exactly aligns with everything that I'm doing. Yes. It's not going to cause me any problems. And I can't really foresee why this would have any downsides. Right? Mm-hmm. That never happens.
Well, I mean, it's the whole problem with like just surrounding yourself with yes people, right? Because like, if there isn't a point of contention, then you're not going to have the best possible outcome. Mm-hmm. You know, you won't anyway because it's not a thing you get to have. But you're gonna have a better outcome if you surround yourself with people who evaluate what you do. You know, yeah. And like what in your ideas because collaboratively you get to come at things with more angles.
You know, in economics, equilibrium is where the lines cross.
Yeah.
You know, whoa.
But in physics, equilibrium is death.
Mm. So, you know. So pick your metaphor, you know, man.
So just do whatever you want. All right, you guys. Well, that's all the time we have for this year.
Yeah, I'm done.
2020 Blendy is over. We are going to get ready for 2021 Dunk on Everyone. Mm-hmm. As always, thank you all for listening. We'd like to thank all of our fans and players who followed the podcast this year, who played Levelhead, played Crashlands, played all of our games. Of course, you guys are all the reason that we do this anyway, because if you guys weren't here, well, neither would we be. So, so thank everyone for supporting us through all this stuff. And hopefully we have a great 2021 coming up. We'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jen Coster, for putting this episode together. And thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, go to podcast.bscotch.net, where we have links to the Discord, a way for you to donate, and links to the podcast archives. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next year.
Goodbye.